By John Dyer V and Sarah Montague, and produced by Brian DeShazer, with production assistance by Daniel Luisias, the producer of this week's special Pride feature. You heard music by Paul Simon, Ketza, and Carolyn Kingsbury. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Thanks also to Los Angeles cannabis provider MMD Shops for being a This Way Out Pride partner. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KICI Iowa City, Iowa, Lofty FM Adelaide Hills, South Australia, WRWK Midlothian, Virginia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay prideful.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Are you eloquent, an elephant? Can you converse in chimpanzee? Have a heart-to-heart in horse or chat with a cow? Me neither, but we can definitely speak for them. Hi, I'm Michelle Coppola, inviting you to join me every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m. for Voices for the Animals, where we give a voice to the issues, concerns, and welfare of the other non-human creatures on the planet. Until we can have in-depth discussions in dolphin or yak, well, in yak, it's a great way to learn about how we can make this a more humane world. Voices for the Animals, every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m. only here on KBOO.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
And yes, you are indeed listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Let's face it, your favorite radio station. And you are tuned in to our special live programming for June and July. And it is, well, tonight, special night, just like the rest of nights that we've had Tuesdays, 7 p.m. Tonight we have the fourth live panel in commemoration of Pride Month and LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. So yes, tonight is another wonderful night where you can join us in celebration of the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer and questioning, intersex, asexual or agender, as well as two-spirit community members. Tonight we're live in Studio One with our fourth panel, Queer Youth. And we have great guests here. And what about if we just go ahead and you guys introduce yourselves here to our awesome listenership right now?
Hi. My name is Logan. My pronouns are they, them. And I'm 22 years old. Hello.
Hi, I'm Sawyer. I am 21 years old and I use they, he pronouns.
Hi, my name is Patrick. I use any pronouns, they, he, she, and I am 25 years old.
Hi, I'm Margot. I'm 24, and I use they, them pronouns. Happy to be with you all.
Such a wonderful, luminous group once more. What about, Kate, if you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Kate. I'm 23. My pronouns are she, her.
And you are our engagement coordinator, right?
I am.
Yeah, hooray for KBOO. And lastly, my name is Ender Black, and I am your KBOO's public affairs director, pronouns he, him, I'm 24 years old, and I am so, so happy to be here. So what about if we just start off, well, first and foremost, I wanna remind you, the listener, that you are welcome to call right now. We are definitely accepting calls. We are waiting for your participation. 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. But I want to also clarify, your participation will be brief since we have to focus on the panel. So let's go ahead with basic questions. Well, I think you already did names, pronouns, and age. What about if we go with gender and sexual identity, relationship style? What about that? We go, Margot, let's go.
Sure, yeah, I can start. I identify as non-binary and am polyamorous and, you know, currently have multiple partners and enjoy moving freely around.
Mm-hmm. I identify as non-binary. I identify as queer for my sexuality and currently monogamous.
I am transmasculine, and I am queer and monogamous.
I'm queer and non-binary as well.
And you are Patrick.
Yes, I am.
It's important to also, you know, mention your names from time to time. So let's start off with one of the questions. What is your relationship with the queer community? Does your social circle mostly consist of other queer community members, or does it vary? Just give us some insight on that, whoever wants to start.
Well, for Logan, me personally, I am very mixed on my group of people that I'm friends with. I'd say I have a big group of queer friends that I'm friends with. But mostly for me, my biggest friendship that I look for as a queer person is people that are willing to be accepting of me as I am as a person, and that we're all able to grow together as people.
This is Sawyer. I definitely agree. I look for people who will hold space for what I am saying and listen to my experience. I think that says a lot. I do mostly have friends in the queer community, close friendships. I do have other friendships, you know, but they tend to be work relationships, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I was going to say my relationships with non-queer people is mostly like work or like volunteer related stuff that I partake in, and they're like acquaintances, but I'm not going to get close with them. Just by nature, I don't know. We have different politics, and that's fine.
I also have lots of queer friends, but I have a lot of friends who aren't queer as well and love them just the same.
Do you think this is a normal thing that happens? Like, for example, being having an ease of making friendships with people in the queer community as opposed to the rest. Is this a normal thing, you think?
Mm-hmm. I think it definitely isn't the only factor. I will not be friends with a queer person just because they're queer, mm-hmm. if they are also a bad person. I'm not going to let that be the only reason. You know, I think your character and your values, like I said, are the most important thing. So, you know, I feel like a lot of values line up with queer people, and so that's why that's a lot of my friendships.
Mm-hmm. It also sometimes is about like what you can put up with, honestly, like on a daily basis. It's like, well, am I signing up for like maybe a situation where I don't really feel like I belong, you know? Do I want to be there? And how many spoons do I have? So yeah, it varies.
Yeah, bouncing off of that, what are some of your challenges and dislikes within the queer community?
I can have a lot to say about this. I think
speak on it.
Well, I love queer people generally. You know, I think we're a beautiful, diverse community, but I do think that there is an issue within our community over the past few decades where our identities have become increasingly depoliticized, have become eaten up and commercialized, mm-hmm. For profit. you know, there's this great interview from the early 2000s with Sylvia Rivera, one of the, you know, founding revolutionaries of the queer movement, talking about how she doesn't see pride as being hers anymore, and that she sees it being this capitalistic thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real issue. There's a lot of, like, think about, like, the Pete Buttigieg's of the world, the Milo Yiannopoulos's of the world, right? There's, just because you are a gay person or you're lesbian or you're trans doesn't mean that you inherently have that solidarity that I think all queer people should have with each other, which is so important. And I also think that there's just, connected with that as well, is that there's a general you know, lack of awareness about our history, our culture, especially among people our age. And, you know, that's something that's been part of the culture wars, right? You know, just look at the Don't Say Gay bills in, you know, like Florida and other states. This is knowing our history, knowing our culture is inherently a political issue because our existence has been made to be political. And I think we shouldn't be so easy to give into assimilation.
I would like to relate this back to what we were just talking about as well, in making it difficult to have relationships with non-queer people because they don't understand the depth that super small things have, like how a lot of things that have been queer staples and, like, ways that you can identify other people and flags have become very mainstream within the last, you know, 30 years, especially with media. And you see these things that queer people have used as identity, identifying things and identities. It is just totally part of the mainstream world now. And a lot of the people who are using these as just, like, a clothing article don't understand the depth of the history behind such a simple object. And I think, you know, that comes for a lot of different cultures. We see that everywhere, people using things incorrectly. But that makes it really difficult to have relationships with non-queer people because they don't understand the depth and they can't even hold the space for it in their minds. And that is another reason that it's difficult to even have relationships and friendships with younger queer people, is because, as Patrick mentioned, they don't understand a lot of the history. I mean, I didn't even know the AIDS epidemic was a thing until I was 16 years old because of the community that I grew up in. And it's just interesting to think about all the other people who have no idea what it is, and they have no idea the history or where we've come from, but it's just a costume for a lot of people now.
I agree, though. I feel like we've been homogenized and, like, seen as a one group, and we can have a 1 month for this whole group of people. And it's like, no, we're so expansive, and you're really trying to narrow us down into, I don't know, when you said all of everything out loud, like all the words together, I was like, wow, it really is this giant expanse of this population, and we're only growing, and our politics are only diverging more. Mm-hmm. And you're still really trying to cram us into this little neat box over here. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're not standing for that.
I mean, kind of expanding on what Margo was just saying, like, the celebrating the intersectionality of queerness definitely has been something that has expanded over the last few years, but has been something that needs to expand more and more, because we need to be able to celebrate the differences within the queer community, as opposed to assuming everyone is the exact same and identifies the same way. And rather than coming together and being able to celebrate ourselves as what we share, as well as our differences.
Yeah, thank you. This kind of leads us into our next question. As a young person in the queer community, do you feel a certain level of disconnect from older members of the queer community?
Yes. Like, I don't know, that same with the AIDS thing, like, I feel that just because I feel like I've been punished because I don't have lived experience. Like, I'm sorry, I wasn't born when you were. There are different pivotal events, you know, that are in my brain that are different than yours. I don't know.
I think we also have a lot to learn for sure. But it's a difficult thing, because obviously there were a lot of, you know, at least gay men, you know, gay queer men who did die, you know, between the 70s and 90s. Obviously not all of them, you know. There's still a, you know, quite large number of, you know, older queer people, but I feel like there seems to be less commonly held spaces with queer people these days, because of like the way that we organize digitally, and you know, I don't really meet older queer people very often, and when I do, it's very great. You know, I learn lots from them, and it's great to have that exchange. But unfortunately, more often than not, like the main way that I tend to like get interaction from like older queer people is like creepy older guys hitting me up on Grindr, which is like, which, you know, like, obviously that's not representative.
But it's just saying that there's not spaces in society where we can meet each other.
Right, right.
It's like it's not a normal thing, which, like, is really sad.
That one of the main spaces that queer people can interact with each other is this like very sexually charged space, and it has, you know, negative effects sometimes.
Absolutely. Even places that are dubbed specifically for queer people, like gay bars and things like that, you still often see a large amount of, the word that's coming to mind is infiltration. You know, you go to a lesbian bar and there's still a large amount of straight women or even straight men there, and it makes it so it's not even our space. And while we still, like, I would love for there to be a space for all of those people to feel comfortable and non-sexualized, but they take away from it being our comfortable space. And by that infiltration, it makes it so every single queer person's hackles just raise in the space. And I, at least, immediately feel uncomfortable because, you know, I have very, like, real experience with homophobia in places like that, and it makes it so that, you know, you're very aware of straight people in every sense, and when there's not a place specifically for us, it gets even more difficult.
When it comes into regards of getting to meet older people in the community, I, Logan, really appreciate the fact that when I came out when I was younger, my parents took me to PFLAG meetings, which, at least when I was going, stood for parents and families of lesbians and gays, which for the area that I went to for the PFLAG meetings, I got to meet a lot of elder queer people from the community as like a child, and I got to interact with, I remember one time there was a lady that came to all of the meetings that came up and got in front. She was like 80 years old and she was a trans woman and told us the story of her being a trans woman at 80 years old and what that was like for her. And I remember that being a really big experience for me and finding that really valuable to be able to find that space in PFLAG to be able to have people to look up to.
I think it has been very difficult for me, Sawyer, to talk to queer elders as well, because I have experienced a lot of difficulty coming into myself and being comfortable, and a lot of trauma around that. And it's very healing to hear from other older queer folks who had the same experience, but it's also a little jarring, you know, to have these 50, 60-year-old adults come up to me when I'm, you know, barely 21, and they're like, wow, you had this exact same experience as me 50 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, you know? And it's kind of jarring, and it really puts you in your body, because it makes you realize that, you know, the experiences that I had, while they were unique, they really weren't. You know, and like, it's super common in queer history to have these very difficult backstories. But it's very interesting because I get to learn so many things about these queer elders, and I have a very unique struggle in common with them that I do feel like definitely brings me closer, because there is this idea, I think, like, older queers maybe keep us at arm's length because they do see the mainstream spread of queerness. And so maybe they're a little bit more wary of younger queers, you know, and their experiences. But, like, for me, I've been brought into those spaces, and so it's been very interesting to see, like, brought under as, like, under their wing, so.
And this takes me to a question that I'll ask in a few seconds. I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and tonight we are live in Studio One here at KBOO Studios with our fourth panel, Queer Youth, and these are our series of panels every Tuesday at 7 o'clock in commemoration of Pride Month and, most importantly, LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. And I heard that word a couple of times, culture, heritage, history. This is something that I think that's a whole different panel altogether. But I also want to remind the listeners that you are welcome to call for a brief call. That would be 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And you can ask questions. You can connect to our panelists. And what you were talking about, well, it just takes me to this basic question. We hear, or at least I hear everywhere, that Portland, where we live, it's supposed to be this progressive haven where everything is cool and people are free to be themselves and it's kind of a safe space, etc. And it's definitely different from what we hear from other states. You know, we could name them Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, etc. Do you feel this is true, that Portland, that you're lucky to be here? That, of course, it can be better. What are your thoughts about that?
I think in some ways it is true that Portland is very uniquely progressive, that Oregon is uniquely progressive. I moved here to Oregon from Missouri. I lived in St. Louis, Missouri from the time I was in middle school through high school. And before that, I spent my childhood and before that point in San Diego. And you know, it's a stark difference. The culture is very different, and in like, you know, but there's also like still limitations to that, right? Like, you know, there's the whole idea of like the people who will like put up like a black like a pride flag and a Black Lives Matter sign, and businesses that'll have like a pride flag and a Black Lives Matter sign and no public bathroom. You know, like the whole idea of like, you know, having this performative kind of progressive values while still you know, targeting or having these very viscerally negative opinions of like the least among us, you know, the poorest among our society, the unhoused, the most marginalized people in our society who, you know, need our help the most. And so I think that's a central kind of conflict that is here in this region. And also, you know, Portland, Oregon has this reputation as being very progressive, but it's also, you know, as a lot of people may know, but many people may not know, but, you know, Oregon in its state constitution, of course, banned Black people from living here. And that has had a residual effect for decades and decades on the racial diversity here in the state. And that's a real thing. So, yes and no, in my view.
Yeah, I feel like white people can move through spaces in Portland very differently than people of color. And as a brown person, I definitely feel that. But I also have, like, learned where I'm welcome and where I want to go. And I, like, follow those paths. So, you know, I've, like, found the run clubs that, like, I like and that are more diverse and, you know, do the things that I want to do. So there is ways to navigate it, but I definitely do feel like it benefits, it is more progressive and it benefits white people in different ways than non-white people, for sure.
Sawyer, I think you had a thought.
I was loading, yeah, it was loading there. I grew up in very rural Idaho, and I spent a lot of my time in a teeny tiny ghost mining town in the Owyhee Mountains, which on the signs has a population of one. So it was very small and very hick, very rural, you know. As far as I was concerned, I didn't see a gay person until I was probably 8 years old.
I thought you were going to say until you. I was like, you didn't see a gay person until it was you.
I didn't see a gay person until the first time I looked in the mirror. Yeah. And it was really interesting when I moved here because there is just the world is so different. Portland is a big city for me, and it's still scary. You know, I'm just a little hick in the big city. But there is also an entirely different kind of fear that I have let go of since moving here. I don't worry that I'm going to get picked up off the side of the street by someone who I've known since I was a baby, and then they're going to be the person to kill me, you know? That's not the fear that I have as a visibly queer person anymore. But growing up in those small towns and with those people, it was just even wearing pants and a baggy t-shirt in a non-feminine way, and that is like asking for it. So moving here was like a very enlightening thing, but it is still, you know, as my colleagues, as my panelists have said, you know, there are definitely places where it is not, you know, as great or as developed as it should be. But I also think that we have come a really long way.
I guess all I, Logan, have to add to that is that I know Portland is a really, really great hub, and it definitely gives a lot of resources to people that don't have it otherwise. But it's also interesting how you can travel 30 minutes outside of Portland and you're not in that vibe anymore. I know where I live personally, I live out towards the coast in a little teeny tiny town, and the place that I work at, I love watching queer people walk in and like have them be a little nervous because they're like, I'm in a small town in the middle of nowhere, like what's going to happen? And they see me and you can immediately see like the wash off because they're like, oh, there's another queer person here. So at the same time, like a little ways out of Portland, it's a big difference in the way that people are received as well.
Well, those were very complete answers.
Yeah, thank you. And sort of diving into the idea of safe spaces, queer safe spaces in Portland, do you have any favorite spaces that you love to be in, any queer activities or clubs or communities that you formed?
My partner and I really love to go to Dr. Marie's. It is I think it's like technically a lesbian bar. And we go every third Friday. This is not a plug. We go every third Friday for Queer Country Night. But if you do go, you will see us there. We really like to do that. It's a very comfortable queer space with, you know, a little extra room if you're an introvert like I am.
I mean, I already brought up run clubs, but I feel like they're super gay. I don't know. You make them gay by going. I don't know. Other queer events. Yeah, just other sporting events, I feel like. Finding, like, the queer, like, athletes has been really nice. And, yeah, there's a lot of them, which is great. Because then we can do things together.
Well, I personally have found a lot of good queer community in the art side of Portland as well, in the arts and crafts side, as well as not just in Portland, but just personally through online. Like, online has really increased the amount of accessible queer safe spaces if you are able to access online. You know, chat rooms, being able to get to know people, see people that are inspiring as queers in the community that have done it and gone far, and being able to follow what they're doing from the opposite side of the country is also a really big thing.
My main source of queer community here in Portland has been my queer friends, but I moved up here from Portland a year ago, from Eugene a year ago.
That wasn't a long trip.
Yeah, and I'm still kind of, I had a much larger, kind of more established, I guess, queer community there, just because I went to U of O and I was there for 5 years, but yeah, mostly just my friends at the moment.
No, it's hard to like find the ones that you want to keep close. Like, I feel like there are so many queers and gays in Portland that like, they're, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like, it's hard to find your people. So like, I don't know. Yeah.
I definitely agree. When I first moved to the area, it was really difficult to find people that I knew I wanted to keep spending a lot of time with.
And I feel like we're picky. I'm like, yeah, you gotta hit all of these things.
No, it's so true. And there is a certain kind of privilege that a lot of queers in Portland have that they don't realize they have, where they've never had to work very hard, like at a job. So I've found a very nice, hardworking queer community in like the fast food industry. I'm a barista, you know, I'm in there washing dishes every day. And, you know, there's a lot of really hardworking queers with very important values who know what it means to, you know, put in a whole day's work and have it be exhausting.
I'd love to expand more on that. If anybody has anything to add about the disconnect that can exist, like the disconnect of privilege between different members in the queer community.
I think, you know, I guess the two main ways that we kind of see that the most is, you know, on the axes of like race and class. Mm-hmm. I'm a white person, so I can't really speak too much on, you know, racial privilege because I do experience it, right? But I don't experience the opposite end of it. And, but on the class level, at least, you know, there is a big difference between how wealthier queer people experience the world and how, you know, more working class, poor queer people have to navigate the world. And I do find myself having a harder time connecting with, you know, people who are gay and wealthier because...
Where do they come from? Does anyone know? Like, how are they making money?
Well, lots of trust funds, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Or I guess they, I don't know, choose to be a business major, get into advertising or something like that.
A lot of people here, I've noticed, don't even realize that having a tiny bit of money for college is a privilege. Like, I don't know, I've been paying my own health insurance since I graduated high school, and a lot of queer people here have a nice foundation where their parents love them, and their parents are going to pay their health insurance until they're 26, and they're going to pay for them to go to college, and I did not have any of that, and it has put me in a lower section, and it has shown me, you know, there is a huge difference. And people who don't have that teeny tiny little step up, their parents paying for their gas for all of high school, even, that's a privilege, you know, and a lot of queer people here don't realize it.
And I feel like money also changes how you move through the world as a queer person. You can be more selective about where you're going. You can choose safer spaces. You can go to like the higher scale stuff. I don't know. It really skews things in an interesting way. And I feel like it's lost on a lot of the rich gays who don't really get it.
Definitely. I see that a lot in the food service industry because I don't think very many people would choose to spend their life behind the counter in food service. And if you don't have to be there, it makes it a lot easier to not be there. And so a lot of queer people who haven't had to have a job have never experienced being forced to stand there while someone berates you, you know? And there's a certain, you learn some things about yourselves and you learn respect for other people, you know, when you don't have that money and you're forced to work for everything. If you're not there, you're not making your rent, you're on the street, you know, just like that.
I do think there's an age divide though. Like, I feel like older gays like are more likely to like have had a more legit career. I feel like all of us young gays are just like, I got like three side hustles and I'm making it work, you know? And I feel like the older gays had a more traditional maybe career experience and they're maybe a little bit more like well off or something because of that, and that changes things. So I feel like that sometimes is the age disconnect. Or also just how they're perceived by the world.
We're also starting to like really run out of generational money in just the middle general people, I think. And so the people who maybe would have gotten their college paid for before now suddenly aren't, you know? Like the family I come from, I should have gotten my college paid for. But because of, I should have, you know, with the wealth, you know, all things considered, my college could have been paid for. But because of like the lack of like a generational wealth and the trickle down, there's less people with that platform, I think. So maybe there's just less people who had the money to send their kids to college in our generation, if that makes sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And people of all kinds of, you know, departments of human would identify with that. It makes a big difference to have the means, have supportive parents, and not having them. I know that for a fact. And you have another question, Kate?
Oh, sure. I'm going to pivot drastically and ask about everyone's experience navigating love and dating in the queer community. I know earlier we touched a little bit on how much the culture has changed with dating apps and the internet. Yeah, I'd love to hear your experiences with that.
Well, I know for me, Logan, right now, thankfully, I was able to find someone good through a dating app because, you know, that's the days that we live in. But I also remember, like, back in school when I was younger and first coming to terms with my sexuality and not really knowing what I wanted to identify as and, like, who I was. And so identifying as lesbian at first and then realizing that there was some guys at my school that I liked. And then that turned into them bragging that they turned to the lesbian straight. And, like, that whole trying to figure out who I love and who I want to be with and myself in terms of love, especially when it comes as being a youth and being a kid, like, it's definitely a hard space to be in because you're like, I don't know what I'm feeling and I don't know who I'm attracted to and I'm still trying and it's gonna be rough. And, like, then it just gets a little bit scary for kids trying to figure out how to find love.
I've had quite an experience, you know, trying to navigate love and dating in the queer community myself. I mean, I was boy crazy from, you know, the time I hit puberty. And, you know, growing up, I had a lot of, like, difficulty, like, being able to find other people like myself that I could connect with and felt the same way about me as I did about them. And then coming in, you know, to my coming of age, becoming more of an adult and, like, navigating dating apps has been a whole nother thing, right? And I just have found a lot of, I've had some, you know, relationships, some nice relationships, but more often than not, it's been, you know, one-off things or a passionate affair that doesn't really have any defined kind of thing. And that can be fun, you know? We like to go with the flow. But, you know, I would like to settle down someday, but I'm not rushing it, you know? Life is life, you know? Love is crazy. And I'm just taking it as it comes to me, and
I do feel like people are non-committal, though.
That is
very
true.
What you're trying to say? Like, I feel like that's what you're trying to say.
I feel like, particularly with, like, queer men, there's a big issue with non-commitment, and it's understandable. We're young, we're horny, you know, it's natural. But, like, I've also found there's a lot of people in our age bracket who don't feel that way, who want something more committed, and they have this difficulty. And
again, it's expansive, and we're all here, and it's not, we're all, not just, we don't feel just this one way,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I definitely had a lot of difficulty when I was back living in Idaho, still trying to date as a queer person, because a lot of people who come from really small areas don't realize that they really do have a lot of trauma and baggage that they're carrying around with them that is unresolved or just they haven't even realized it's there yet. You know, growing up in those places where everything is armored and against you without you even, you know, there's so many layers that so many queer kids don't even realize their whole world is against them. But it was really difficult trying to date because no one really had it dealt with. And so it's really hard to have a relationship, which is what I was looking for, when the people don't even know themselves. And it was like a common thing in such a small place.
I still feel like that. Yeah. Like, how are we trying to date each other? We don't even know. I'm like,
do you know who you are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you're going to try and tell me about who you are. Yeah.
Yeah. It was also really interesting trying to date or like putting myself on dating apps as a trans masculine person. And at the time I was on testosterone as well. And it became this very weird fetish situation where I, you know, warranted or not, you know, people made sure that I knew how they felt about me and where they wanted me. Those kinds of things made me very uncomfortable, and it was completely unwarranted just because I was a trans masculine individual. And I think a lot of that comes from the amount of closeted people who live in Idaho. You know, shout out if you don't realize you're gay, you know, it's okay.
But you're attracted to me.
Yeah, it's okay, you know. I'm just walking down the street. You don't have to fall in love with me. It's okay. But, like, it was a big fetish thing where it was like, maybe they just haven't figured themselves out yet, but you are making it really, really weird for me. And if you just want to say that you don't see me as a man or as a non-binary person and you see me as a woman and that's the issue, then that's fine. Especially with men, that was the issue, is like the fetishization of a trans mask person. Because I like, you know, I was interested in dating men at the time as well, and I think they had a large hand in the fetishization of me.
You know, I've had similar experiences as well, because I am non-binary, but there are some times where I like to present myself in a more feminine way, and, you know, there's a hardcore fetishization of that, and it's more often than not pretty gross.
It's and it's scary. I feel like it comes on fast.
Yeah, and they, like, are these people tend to be very demanding and very, like, controlling and very, like, all bad vibes. Scary. I mean, like, there's a lot of people who, like, are very understanding of, like, gender nonconformity and are very chill about it and very beautiful and wonderful about it, but the people who have to be weird about it make it kind of frustrating sometimes.
Yeah. I will say that made it very relieving, though, to move to a place where there are more people like me, because it, you know, I don't want to be incredibly picky, I guess, but it makes it so that I can really know what I'm looking for, you know, in a partner, in a long-term partner, because in such a small school of people who are out and who are willing to date, even a lot of them don't want to be seen in public, you know, or they don't want a long-term relationship and all these different things. And so it suddenly made it so I could, like, really look for, like, the person that I wanted when I moved here, because the community is so much larger.
I do feel like there's, like, nuance there, though, because, like, I definitely went to high school, like, I came out in high school and, like, was with someone and, like, we were very, like, visible, and that was, like, kind of rare. And I feel like young queer people now, it's just way, like, that's not an experience that a lot of people are going to have. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, changes you and how you perceive the world and how you move through spaces. So I think that difference is big. And that only, like, that happened over a couple of years. Like, yeah, that was a short time. Like, I feel like stuff is just, like, growing more expansive at, like, an exponential rate. I don't even know.
Absolutely. I could talk forever about that. But, like, the first girl I ever dated, I grew up, you know, jumping the back fence so that she could pick me up without my parents seeing, so that she wouldn't be sent, so that her mom wouldn't tell my mom and she wouldn't get sent to conversion therapy, you know, like serious stuff. Like, if they caught us spending time together, it was like, your life is over forever. And I don't really feel like that's the experience anymore, you know, like, my first girlfriend got sent to conversion therapy. Legit, you know? That doesn't happen anymore.
And you're not, like, blaming anyone for that not happening, but it's like that there's a difference in the experience and how we move as a collective, in our collective lived experience. It's like the gap in the lived experience between like us and the AIDS epidemic. It's like it's not similar, but like the nuance in between the timing is interesting.
Well, that opens a whole different kind of worms where their conversion therapy doesn't sound like it's very therapeutical.
Right.
And I don't think it really can work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's just
not
an exercise of futility that just creates more trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because, I mean, I think there are some states, I mean, they're cracking down on these places, but there are probably some open.
There's a lot of them that are also disguised as religious camps. You know, like I grew up in a very religious community, and a lot of that, like, ooh, church camp, come learn about God, is really just like super intense, covered. You know, like they're not being incredibly outward with it. There's no like brainwashing, but it's definitely, you know, just under a couple layers where they are telling you that it is very bad and awful and you should never ever consider it, you know. Lots of brainwashing, I guess.
But then it's like, I can't imagine being a brown queer kid in Louisiana where they just decided that the Ten Commandments could like have to be on the wall. Like, that's insane. And that, like, I don't know, it's a connection between, like, again, the church and like conversion therapy. Like, it's there, it's like there's evidence, and I don't know.
Wow, that is really bad news about Louisiana. Well, I want to remind the community, right now it's 7:45, we're almost 15 minutes, almost done with this fourth panel of our series that we've been having this month in honor of Pride Month and LGBTQIA2S+ heritage, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. And guess what? If you just tuned in and you're like, oh, I missed a panel, that's okay. You can go to kboo.fm, that's kboo.fm, wait an hour or so, and then the audio will be there. And you can participate, just listen to, you know, this is community radio right here. We're all from Portland. We're talking about very important topics. And it's nice to be here with you. If you have a question, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And what about if we go ahead and I don't think we've asked this question. What are some common misconceptions about the queer community that you would like to clear up? And I want to add something. Again, common misconceptions about the queer community that you want to clear up. But also, just imagine that you're talking to a straight 70-year-old people that need some clarification, because they really actually want to learn, you know? They want to learn, but they watch too much Fox and CNN. I don't know exactly what they do. But what do you want to... What do you want to tell them about?
I feel like people just think we're mean. I'm like, I'm not mean. Like, you can talk to me. I want to talk to you. Yeah. Why do you think I'm mean? Like, I want to hear about that, you know?
We're not going to hate you for trying to learn.
Yeah.
Oh, we have a caller. That's so wonderful. Okay, let's come in here. Hello. Thank you for calling. Are you there?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear a bunch of echo right now. But yes, go ahead with your question. Thank you for calling, by the way.
I'm just curious about what everybody does to celebrate their queerness on a daily basis.
That's an excellent question, right? Who would like to go?
I mean, for me at least, this is Patrick. I don't know, I just like to connect with other queer people, watch queer media, and just like engage with the world in a political way. I don't know. That's my way of experiencing queerness, because I view it as a very political identity for me myself. But yeah, that's just me.
Politics.
I really like to just kind of just look up at the sky and revel in the fact that I'm getting to live this life. You know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Bye, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for talking. I guess it's not that exciting. And just revel in the fact that I get to live my queer life with my lover, with my queer friends, and I'm just thankful that I did that and that I'm here.
Oh, by the way, sometimes people hang up by accident because, you know, phones on radio sometimes. What's that all about, right? You go ahead, Logan.
Well, I really love to celebrate just my queerness by going out and trying to be as authentically myself as I can, however that is in that day, whether that's changed from the day before. Just trying to be whatever I need to be for my past self or trying to be whatever I need for my future self, and bringing joy and like the experience that comes with being queer and trying to spread that happiness around to everyone I can.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the joy factor and like the awe and just like being in awe of living, like what you said, like my queer life. I don't know. I think it's also crazy because like when you grow up in those environments, when you're in a high school where it feels like literally everybody is straight except for you, and then you're living like this, and it's like, wow, these lifetimes happened like so close together. And like, what's the potential? I don't know. It's just, there's so much potential. And I feel like that is something that unites the queer community. Like, I feel like we all see the potential in life.
I just forgot what I was going to say. Okay.
Well, before you remember, we got interrupted with a really good question by the caller, but we were talking about common misconceptions about the queer community. Just imagine you're talking to a crowd of 65-year-old straight people. So what would you tell them? What would you tell them about, okay, this is what being queer is. Welcome to 2024. This is what we're all about.
I think one that we unfortunately still have to keep talking about, even though it's not 1975 anymore, but we're not trying to convert your children. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to do something nefarious. We're just trying to live our lives peacefully and just be ourselves, really.
I think it's also really important that, like I said earlier, that people know that they can learn, but to know that other older folks are learning as well. You know, I have a set of 80-year-old Catholic grandparents from Idaho, and that's, you know, that's a little daunting of a label for them, but they are the most kind-hearted, passionate, loving people ever. And when I came out, they just asked me what that meant for me. And I think listening to the queer youth and just remembering that we're new at taking up space here too, and that, you know, like, we want to share this experience with them, and if they want to learn, we want to help teach them. So
that's great. Anybody else has a comment about that, or should we go ahead with the next question?
So we've talked a lot about the relationship between the queer community and outside communities, but I would love to know about how your relationship has changed with yourself since coming out.
I know I've come a long way from, you know, where I was at when I was 11, 12, 15, even like 18, 19, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of life, is always evolving, always changing, always, you know, developing new understandings of ourselves. You know, for a long time, I didn't really question my gender. I didn't really start, you know, reconsidering that until I was in my 20s. And I still don't feel like I'm fully at a place where I'm very settled with that. But, you know, that's part of the process. We love to, you know, figure things out, you know, and explore. That's a beautiful part of queerness, is that it's so expansive and that it's not any this or that, or, you know, it's just doing your thing, you know?
I definitely agree. I think my relationship has changed maybe more dramatically with myself now versus when I first realized I might be gay. Because I only came out recently after I moved out of my parents' house. But I think it has changed incredibly, and I think I, like, see that this queer life is worth living, and that, I don't know, I feel like that's just the really important thing I'm trying to get at, is that I realized that my identity as a queer person and just as myself has enough worth for that to be what you live for.
And Do you have a comment? Okay,
yeah.
Go for it.
I know I personally have not just found like love for myself more, but also love for other people around me, and not just love, but understanding for other people around me, of like, even in a situation of working towards, if someone says something homophobic to me, trying to, instead of taking that in on myself and putting that back out as hatred, trying to put that back out as they're hurting and that person is hurting and that doesn't have anything to do with me, so I'm going to continue loving myself. Mm-hmm. And having that sort of mindset has definitely grown more for me since I've come out.
That's so great, because I think that is the case. Maybe I'm wrong, but that seems to be, that's my experience too, with every time I see somebody trying to offend somebody else for whatever reason, it can be upsetting, but the other person trying to offend, they're obviously going through something and they're just trying to lash out. It's like mental health situation, you know? I think it's so wonderful that that's how you see it. What is your advice? I think it's a very important question. And I guess this is geared toward kids, you know, maybe teenagers who are now, many of them are probably freaking out, like, oh my goodness, like, this is me. You know what I mean? So what is your advice to the next generation of queer folks? Well, if you had youth, they're asking for your advice about the next steps. What would that be?
I mean, I don't want to tell them to do anything. It's more like just keep going, and like you're going to bring us so many like expansive solutions. I work in like the environmental field with climate change issues, and I just think that like queer kids are going to save us, and that's like it's brought us so many solutions, and the queer community has always been just like, I don't know, creating groundbreaking stuff around culture, around science, around everything. And yeah, I think queer kids just need to just keep living their lives, and they'll bring us cool. I mean, they don't owe us anything. I'm not trying to say that like they'll bring us answers, you know, to solve the climate crisis. But continue, like you got it. Keep going.
I definitely think that it's important to continue loving. I mean, kind of like I was just saying, hating isn't going to build us up. Hating is going to bring us down. Loving each other within our communities and loving the people that help us grow stronger and build ourselves up is what will continue to build us up. So finding that loving community is really, really important.
Absolutely. I also think it's really important to remember that who you are is what's going to last, not the facade you put on or what you show people, but like that's what you need to take care of, and like that's what it's for. Is I just hope that you can be yourself, and I really think that being able to exist in yourself brings so much freedom, and I don't know, you'll never be wrong just being who you are, and it will save you so much time if you just suck it up and get on with it, because you're just going to waste time trying to hide who you are.
Yeah, I want to echo a little bit of what, you know, these great panelists have said, that, you know, just keep loving yourself, keep innovating, keep doing you. You know, I remember when I was a teen, you know, the whole it gets better thing was big, and I still feel like that's still relevant, you know, like, mm-hmm. Even if you're struggling really hard and you feel like you don't matter, you do matter, because everyone has inherent value, but also like we need you to be here to be able to continue on this queer legacy, to be able to, you know, keep making things better for every successive generation, because, you know, nothing changes unless we change it together.
Absolutely. And queerness is joy, you know, and
beautiful, beautiful joy.
Yeah. And being that and letting yourself be who you are will just like, it changes your world. And like being true to that is like the big thing.
Exactly. Life is so short that you don't have time to be anyone but yourself, you know, yeah. So just embrace it.
and it's worth it to be queer. I think that's a really important thing to say. You know, like, it was always drilled into me that being queer would ruin my life, but it's worth it, and I love it, so.
No, it's the best thing ever. Sometimes people, like, when people ask you, like, what's the favorite thing about you, it's like, that I'm gay? I don't know. What else am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
And talking about queer joy, one of our questions is, what is a fun memory of queer joy you have experienced? And we have 3 minutes or less, 2 minutes, so let's keep it short. But yeah, this is important.
The first one that comes to mind for me is I have this very distinct memory of being in high school. I think I would have been like 16 at the time, because this was June of 2015 when the Obergefell v. Hodges Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage across the country. I just remember being with my queer friends and just like celebrating it. And it was like, obviously we're nowhere near getting married, obviously, but it was a harbinger of good things, and it's a beautiful memory.
I recently did an ultra, and there was a non-binary category, and I won the non-binary category, and I was the only person in the non-binary category, but I still won, and it was amazing, and it was, like, really emotional, and all my friends were there, and it was awesome. So, yeah, big queer joy.
I would say for me, it would be finding the album Uncle Sem by Sem Janson, which is an album that he created while in transition on hormones. So there's duets between himself pre-T and post-T, which is something that is so beautiful that only a trans person or a gender non-conforming conforming person can make. And I find that stunning and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I think something that I think is really important for queer joy, and something that I often am able to identify as feeling when I'm feeling queer joy, is seeing it in mainstream media now. You know, like, we were just talking about the drawbacks, but like, TV shows have two gay characters kissing now, and that is just so, like, mind-blowing to me, and it just, like, warms me up all the way to the top. So
that reminds me of Legend of Korra.
Good morning. You have some gravy in your ear. This is Wavy Gravy, Temple of Accumulated Air and Voice of Woodstock, telling you you are listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The 90s are the 60s. Standing.